Welcome to GhostBiz. Here on the Business Report, I'm Gary Strubel, and every week I get to chat to the finance guys to talk about what's going on in the markets here in Southern Africa and sometimes abroad as well, and trying to understand how this affects us. So, Ghost, welcome back to the show. Let's start out with a story about a brand that trades very actively here in Namibia, and that's Alexander Forbes, Alex Forbes. They're now rebranded last year. The share price has been a bit volatile, but it looks like there's lots of good news coming out of that company. I think Alex Forbes might be, for many people, that kind of company that they're not entirely sure what they do. So maybe you could just break down what's happening over there at Alex Forbes.
Hi, Gary, and to all the listeners. Yeah, Alex Forbes is an interesting place to start. And it's actually quite a funny question because there's so much truth in it, right? It is just one of those big names where everyone knows the name, but it kind of gets bucketed in with these broad financial services firms like Old Mutual and Sanlam and Momentum. And it's actually quite hard from the outside looking in to truly understand all of the differences. I would kind of group them all as non-banking financial services groups, although now Old Mutual is going to complicate that going forward because they are, of course, building a bank. Unlike Old Mutual, which seems to be adding on stuff like that, Alex Forbes has actually been slimming down in recent years and focusing, and that strategy does seem to have worked. So their business is essentially built around employee benefits consulting, for want of a better term. So retirement stuff, medical, etc., very much an advice-led model. So they have loads and loads of assets that they either manage or advise on and then earn a fee accordingly. And they've actually done pretty well in the past year. So the share price is up almost 40% in the past 12 months. Normalized headline earnings per share up 23% in the latest financial period. So they've actually done really, really nicely here. And I think it shows the power of focusing. Even when it's a business of this size, they still have a whole lot of sub-segments that they can slice and dice and look deeper into and say, well, you know, here's where we are making a lot of money and here's other areas that maybe aren't as fantastic. And then the idea is to sell off the bits where you don't think you can win and invest in the areas where you have a natural strength. And that seems to have worked well for Alex Forbes. And it'll be interesting to track how they do against, as I say, those other non-banking financial services groups.
Another big company that many of us would engage from a day-to-day basis is Barloworld. Barloworld currently under offer, and it looks like the Competition Commission have approved that deal. So perhaps just talk us through what's happening at Barloworld and what does it mean when the ComCom says you can go ahead?
Yeah, so what happens in South African law and the way a lot of the deals are structured, I imagine it's the same overseas as well, is you actually put an offer on the table and you make it subject to regulatory conditions, and the Competition Commission would typically be one of them for any large deal. There are specific thresholds above which the ComCom needs to get involved, and most listed deals will breach that threshold. So what happens is that the offer runs in the background and shareholders indicate whether or not they are accepting it, and then it can't actually be implemented until the regulatory approvals are in place. So for the offer to have received Competition Commission approval is good. It's a bit more nuanced than that even, because it actually now goes to the tribunal. And so technically there could still be an issue that emerges from the tribunal, but it is unusual for a situation where the commission, which is kind of the first test, says one thing and the tribunal says another. But it has happened before. So, you know, a deal is never a deal until everything is out of the way. And in this case, even if they get the regulatory approvals, it still might not be out the way because they haven't achieved enough acceptances to actually go ahead with the transaction. Remember, this was originally a scheme of arrangement that failed. It then became a standby offer. Last we heard from the company, that achieved success, or rather an acceptance rate of not even 50% was the last update, if I recall correctly. And that's not enough for them to go through with the deal. They want to get more than that. I personally think, based on the recent numbers from Barloworld and certainly some of the pressure we've seen at a peer like Bell, that shareholders should think very carefully about this offer. I know I would, but we'll see what happens. We'll see whether enough people say yes to actually make it go ahead.
Let's talk about another share that we've spoken about often because of a chap called Des De Beer, who loves buying these shares. Des, obviously, heavily invested in Lighthouse Properties. They were also able to raise $400 million in equity quite recently. What does that tell us about, one, the property market, and two, Lighthouse Properties as a potential investment?
Yes, I always think you should find someone who looks at you the way Des De Beer looks at Lighthouse Properties when it comes out of closed period, because he loves buying these shares, as you've quite correctly pointed out. And he's taken full advantage of the fact that they've done scrip dividends, which basically means that they issue shares instead of dividends. He's also taken advantage of this latest capital raise. So yes, they raised $400 million, and I'll get to that now. But he was 40.5 million of that. So he was basically 10% of the capital raise he stuck his hand up for, which is pretty interesting. It also means, however, that they raised, what is that, 360 million rand from other investors. So there's no shortage of support for this story. Lighthouse is a Europe-focused property fund, but they're listed here on the JSE. So very appealing for those who want to give their money more of an offshore flavor. They like stuff like this. Big focus at the moment on the Iberian Peninsula. So for years, it was all about Poland. That was the big story. And then we had a bunch of funds that did the UK thing as well. Generally speaking, the UK property push didn't really work. Why it worked in Eastern Europe is because they have a good combination of inflation and just a stable operating environment. And for South African investors, we like inflation because we have inflation. So you don't want to be reliant on a low inflation market like the UK, a low growth market. You want to actually put your money where it's growing, but just in a more stable economy. And Iberia, that is obviously Spain and Portugal, seems to offer relatively similar economics to what we've historically seen in Eastern Europe, which is why the likes of Lighthouse are climbing in there. So they initially planned to raise 100 million rand, and then obviously the phone just didn't stop ringing, and they actually upped their raise to 400 million rand. So that is a pretty strong show of faith from the market. But now it also means that they have a cash drag problem. They need to deploy this capital. It can't just sit on their balance sheet, because otherwise it is very dilutive to distributable income per share. So look out for more Lighthouse deals to come. I do not doubt that they will be here soon.
And then a big story that I found on your most excellent website, ghostmail.co.za. You can get along there and get all these daily newsletters that bring you up to speed. The story there was titled, First Rand has received approval for the HSBC South Africa deal. Now, HSBC would be a brand familiar to many of our listeners, but certainly First Rand, way more familiar. Tell us about this deal and why it's such a big deal for the local bank.
So whenever you see stuff like this with an international name leaving South Africa, it is amazing how quickly it becomes politicized. And sometimes it is a political thing. Personally, at the moment in the current environment, I don't really think that it's a political thing. South Africa, by emerging market standards, is solid, to be honest. So it really then comes down to international banking groups that are actually looking to just simplify their operations, pull back on some of the territories in which they operate, because it's complex. You know, you can't just come and open a bank in South Africa. It's obviously a big regulatory thing that costs money. And sometimes the pain and cost is just not worth the effort for these international players. However, HSBC banks some big and important multinationals which have operations in South Africa. So that's typically what happens, is these banks follow their clients. So they can't have a scenario where they just drop them and say, sorry, cheers everyone, we're out. And that's why they actually did a transaction with First Rand to basically shift across not just the assets and liabilities, but also the clients and the employees of HSBC's branch in South Africa. Now, because this is a very corporate-focused bank, this slots very nicely into RMB as part of the First Rand group. I think it's quite a nice win there for First Rand, because it basically gets them a whole lot of client relationships. And it's good for HSBC because it's an orderly exit. They pass the baton to RMB and say to their clients, look, we might not be here anymore, but actually, this business is great. They will bank you going forward. No harm, no foul. So what they've now done is they've received regulatory approval for the deal, and it is expected to be completed by the end of October.
And then lastly, Telkom. Now, Telkom trades here in Namibia with its subsidiary BCX, IT provider, services provider. But Telkom has just released results for the year ended March. Group revenue only 3% higher, but EBITDA jumped 25%, which is, you know, almost unbelievable. Also important to add, Telkom being a South African state-owned entity, and SOEs are often sort of painted with the same brush, Telkom has had dark periods, but it really seems like there's lots of good things going for Telkom. Tell us more.
Telkom has been quite the story, right? And it's actually a good example of how privatization can improve things, because as you point out, historically a state-owned entity, then they IPO'd the thing. As far as I know, the government stake is sort of in the high 30% now. It might be around 40%. And the rest is now held in the market effectively. And like we've seen with a lot of the telcos at the moment, Telkom has been doing really well. It's weird how all the telcos have suddenly started doing better. It's almost like we reached an inflection point where they had invested so much in stuff like data, et cetera, that, you know, the fall off in voice revenue has finally started to be offset by the uptake in data revenue, for example. And they have also got the infrastructure to do it. So telco is a difficult business model. It really is. For years, they've been big disappointments. And yes, they've been on a great rally recently, but I still don't hold any of them from a long-term perspective. I think I just want to throw that out there. The reason why Telkom's doing well is very little to do with revenue growth and lots to do with profitability. As you pointed out there, they're still on a bit of a treadmill in terms of their legacy voice business, but they are at least at the point where they are now achieving some revenue growth. They do have some pockets of growth like Telkom Mobile that's been particularly strong. The overarching story is just one of a huge improvement in profitability at the business. Share price up over 80%, by the way, in the past year, which I think is particularly strong. And I mean, just to give you an example of how the business has changed. So OpenServe is a good segment to point at. 82% of revenue is now from fiber-related services. That's up from 69% a couple of years ago. So the legacy voice business in OpenServe is now only about 18% of revenue. Now, they do still have some areas where they are fighting a battle. So BCX is a good example. IT hardware sales down 23%. But their cloud revenue, fiber revenue up. They're actively trying to actually improve the mix there, have more services, and then see an uptick in margin as a result. So they are now kind of expecting revenue growth and EBITDA growth in the sort of mid-single digits. So that 80% jump in the share price in the past year, I most definitely would not extrapolate that. Classic case of a business that was trading cheap, hated by the market, suddenly finds a little bit of love, and bam, the share price goes crazy. From here on out, it would have to be about the grind and just consistent delivery. And if they can get that right, then they can definitely deliver half-decent shareholder returns, but it's not going to be another 80% a year situation.
All right, Ghost, we're going to leave it there. Thank you very much for all your insights, and we will chat to you again next week as winter firmly bites. Hopefully there's some warm news in the pipeline. You can catch this episode and all previous episodes of GhostBiz wherever you pick up your podcasts, on Android or Apple or Spotify, or you can go along to nova.com.na and you can catch all of our content there as well. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next week.